Today is day 7 of this June 2009 7-day session. And we'll be continuing the carp theme today and taking up number 49 in the Hikigan Roku, Sancho's The Golden Carp Out of the Net. This is also appears in the Shoyu Roku. It's number 33 in the Shoyu Roku. Sancho said to Seppo, "The golden carp is out of the net. Tell me, what will it feed on?" Seppo said, "When you have gotten out of the net, I will tell you." Sancho said, "The renowned teacher of 1,500 monks can't find anything better to say than this." Seppo said, "My duties as abbot are many and complicated." So, first, let's have a look at these two characters, Sancho and Seppo. Sancho's full name is Sancho Einen in the Japanized form, and San Sheng Huiran in Chinese. We don't have dates for him, but we know he was the principal disciple of Linji Rinzai, who died in 866. He was probably the compiler of the Rinzai Roku, the Linji Lu, which was the collected teachings of Master Linji. Just a little bit of biographical material from Andy Ferguson's Zen's Chinese Heritage. After Linji's death, Sancheng travelled and had encounters with many great masters of the Tang, including Yangshan, Xiangyan, Deshan, Dao Wu, and here with Seppo, Shui Feng, Chinese. And these encounters, of course, were in order for Sancheng to sharpen his abilities. He eventually settled on at Sancheng Monastery, which is where his name comes from, his mountain name. A few Mondo dialogues. When Sancheng met Xiangyan, Xiangyan asked, "Where are you from?" Sancheng said, "From Linji." Xiangyan said, "Did you bring Linji's shout?" Sancheng suddenly picked up a cushion and struck Xiangyan in the mouth with it. Had he brought Linji's shout with him? Another one. When Sancheng arrived at Mount De, he started to arrange his sitting items when Deshan said, "Don't put out your meal apron. There's no rice here." Sancheng said, "Though it's here, it can't be shown." Deshan took his staff and made to strike Sancheng. Sancheng grabbed it and pushed Deshan onto the meditation platform. Deshan laughed loudly. Sancheng shouted and went out. Deshan appreciated that. Somebody up to him. Monk asked, why did the first ancestor come from the west? San Sheng said, spoiled meat draws flies. Later, Xinghua Tsungjian said, an injury on the back of a donkey is full of green flies. My guess is this was quite a bit later, after the story about San Sheng and his master was known, which we'll get to in a minute. In fact, right now. This is when Linji was about to die. And he sat bolt upright and said, after I'm gone, my treasury of the true Dharma eye cannot be destroyed. And then Sang Shen, who was there at his bedside, said, how could we dare destroy the master's treasury of the true Dharma eye? Linji then said, in the future, if someone asks about my teaching, what will you say to them? At this, San Sheng gave a great shout. Linji said, who would have thought that my treasury of the true Dharma eye would be destroyed by this blind ass? Upon saying these words, Linji passed away, sitting upright. What kind of blind ass was San Sheng? What's Linji saying here? The other character in this story is Seppo. His full Japanese name is Seppo Gison. His date's 822 to 908. His Chinese name, Shui Feng Yitsun. Seppo became a monk quite young. It's recounted that already when he was a toddler, he refused to eat non-vegetarian food. And one day, while being carried on his mother's back, he witnessed a funeral pass by, flags and flowers. And apparently this caused a profound change in the child's countenance. His face darkened. So he asked if he could become a monk and was finally allowed to do so at the age of 12. He later was to, after he had received his initial training under a precepts master, he traveled widely, visiting many masters after he was ordained. And when he was 40, already 40, he came to train under the great teacher Deshan Toksan. Deshan was already an old man at this time, about 80. He eventually became Deshan's Dharma heir, but his most profound realization actually occurred with his Dharma brother, Yunto, Ganto, his Japanese name. This happened while they were traveling and staying in an inn during a snowstorm. Stuck in a storm. And during that storm, Ganto helped him to get unstuck, completely unstuck. Eventually, he moved to Snow Peak on Elephant Bone Mountain, and this is what his name means. Shui Feng means Snow Peak. True to the spirit of Zen, Shui Feng's teaching did not rely on words or ideas. Instead, he emphasized self-realization and experience. The Yunmen and Fayan Zen schools came out of, revolved from Shui Feng's students. So he's bequeathed a great legacy to future generations. Stories here. When Shui Feng left Dongshan, Dongshan asked him, "Where are you going?" Shui Feng said, "I'm returning to Lingzhong." Dongshan said, "When you left Lingzhong to come here, what road did you take?" Shui Feng said, "I took the road through the Flying Ape Mountains." Dongshan said, "And what road are you taking to go back there?" Shui Feng said, "I'm returning through the Flying Ape Mountains as well." Dongshan said, "There's someone who doesn't take the road through Flying Ape Mountains. Do you know him?" Shui Feng said, "I don't know him." Dongshan said, "Why don't you know him?" Shui Feng said, "Because he doesn't have a face." Dongshan said, "If you don't know him, how do you know he doesn't have a face?" Shui Feng was silent. After Shui Feng assumed the abbacy at Snow Peak, a monk asked him, "When the master was at Deshan's place, what was it you attained that allowed you to stop looking further?" Shui Feng said, "I went with empty hands and returned with empty hands." This bears on today's case. A monk asked Shui Feng, "Is the teaching of the ancestors the same as the scriptural teaching or not?" Shui Feng said, "The thunder sounds and the earth shakes. Inside the room, nothing is heard." Shui Feng also said, "Why do you go on pilgrimage?" Inside the room, nothing is heard. It's got to sink in, this teaching of the ancestors. A monk asked, "Why is it if my fundamentally correct eye sometimes goes astray?" Sorry, start again. A monk asked, "What is it if my fundamentally correct eye sometimes goes astray because of my teacher?" Shui Feng said, "You haven't really met Bodhidharma." The monk said, "Where is my eye?" Shui Feng said, "You won't get it from your teacher." Keep looking for it outside of ourselves. We're not going to get it from the teacher, from the structure of Sishin, from anywhere but right here. A monk asked, "What is it when one is solitary and independent?" Shuifeng said, "Still sick." Let's have a look at this case. Sancho's the golden carp out of the net. Sancho said to Seppo, "The golden carp is out of the net. Tell me, what will it feed on?" Seppo said, "When you have gotten out of the net, I will tell you." Sancho said, "The renowned teacher of 1,500 monks can't find anything better to say than this." Seppo said, "My duties as abbot are many and complicated." So what's first point here is what Sancho's saying when he says the golden carp is out of the net. Tell me, what will it feed in? Well, we already met the golden carp yesterday. This is the golden carp that leaps upstream and eventually turns into the dragon. Great, beneficent dragon. What does it mean that this golden carp is out of the net? No doubt this exchange happened during the period when Sancho was going around visiting masters after Master Linji, his teacher, died. It could be a couple of things, this net. Sticky nets we create for ourselves out of our opinions about the world. This net, this golden carp is swimming free. Net could also refer to the training that Zen students go through. The hoops they have to leap through. So what's Sancho saying here? He says, tell me, what will it feed on? He's laying down a challenge here to Seppo. Okay. What bait have you got for me? What are you going to throw to me? The thing about bait is that if you're a fish, often bait has a hook in it. It looks nice and juicy and tasty. You chomp down on it and ouch! There was a hook in there. Koans are like this. They have a hook in them. That's why they're so effective. They get us going. Because we can't figure them out with our discursive mind, we have to engage with them. But in that engagement, we're thrown up against is separation. The way we divide the world into self and other. And we can be sure that however we do that in our ordinary life, we'll do the same when we work on the koan. And right there is their enormous value, because we get to see how we relate to the world, to the so-called other. So then Seppo responds, when you have gotten out of the net, I will tell you. How is Sancho still in the net? Does he get hooked by Seppo's reply? His response is, the renowned teacher of 1,500 monks can't find anything better to say than this. So he certainly comes on strong. This is a respected, elderly master. A Laosha, a Roshi. Ha! Renowned teacher of 1,500 monks. You think you're going to get me with that? Now, how about Seppo's response here? My duties as abbot are many and complicated. It's almost like he's making an excuse. Oh, I'm sorry. So sorry. I've got so many things on my plate. Is that what he's saying? This is what's known in Zen as a low response. There's a verse in the Shoyoroku that celebrates this response by Seppo. The mellow old man does not startle the crowd. Used to meeting great opponents, he is fearless from the start. Flapping as lightly as a flag in the wind, he weighs more than 1,000 pounds. His name is known across the four seas. Is anyone his equal? Though the eight winds blow, he stands alone, unmoved. So he's this mellow, frail old man. And certainly his response doesn't startle anyone. It's very mild. It's described here as flapping as lightly as a flag in the wind. Just this little flutter. But this little flutter weighs more than 1,000 pounds. Though the eight winds blow, he stands alone, unmoved. The eight winds are the things that hook us. The things that ruffle our feathers, or maybe we should say our scales. The things that we get hooked on and Sishin. Praise and blame, gain and loss, fame and disrepute, success and failure. We get excited and happy when we feel we are succeeding, receiving praise, and the opposite when we think we're being censured, when we feel like we're a failure. Note that we're not told to just avoid the blame and the failure and etc., but to avoid these dyads that we get into, these dualistic frameworks into which we stuff our experience and distort it. Seppo really is an example to us here. Sancho is really coming on strong. Seemingly insulting him by saying, "Huh, you abbot of a great monastery, you can't even give me a good reply." Rather than coming on strong back, Seppo just says, "I'm very busy, excuse me, I'm sorry, I have to go and attend to the affairs of the monastery." The preface to the version of this in the Shoyoroku says, "Encountering strength, one is meek. Encountering tenderness, one is tough. When two strengths collide, there is always damage. Tell me, how should they accommodate each other?" Jerry Wick, who's written a commentary on the Shoyoroku, makes an interesting point about this. He says that this koan is about skillful means, and that when somebody comes on strong, sometimes retreat is the most effective response. He says, perhaps you are in chronic disagreement with your partner or spouse and there is no room to maneuver. This is like two massive pillars leaning on each other. What should you do? If you are able to retreat from your position, the other pillar has no resistance and has to fall. And then there is space for your partner to also shift position. It's a very interesting point. One that can be helpful in our interactions with people, especially where we feel like we're stuck and horns locked with somebody. How about trying something different? How about yielding? See what happens. Everything could shift. And not just our relationship to other people, also in our work on the practice. Sometimes we can just feel like there's this massive wall of resistance preventing us from really engaging with the koan, with the breath. What that probably means is that we're pushing too hard. If we stop pushing, then there won't be anything for that resistance to resist. We need to yield. Back off. Rather than trying harder, try in a different way. Practice is about surrender. about yielding. When we yield, the small self becomes a little less solid. It becomes a little more yielding. Practice, deep practice, requires tenderness. Requires a quality of opening. Opening without knowing what may come. Opening that doesn't involve taking a position. Thinking we know who and what we are. When Seppo yields, then Sancho has nowhere to go. Essentially, there's nobody to Dharma duel with anymore. But there's more to Seppo's response than this. What's he saying here when he says, "Sorry, I'm very busy. I have to go and attend to temple affairs." There's a barb in this. If we do serious practice, if we do it wholeheartedly and sincerely, we will have insights. We will have beautiful experiences. Sometimes even quite earth-shattering shifts. We can get quite pleased with ourselves when these things happen. There's a word that we use in New Zealand. I don't know what the American equivalent is, but we say that somebody's chuffed when something good happens to them. What this means really is that they're pleased with themselves. Feel a little chuffed. Sort of like you're going around going, "Oh, chuff, chuff. Chuff, chuff, chuff." Thing is that an experience is an experience. In other words, it passes. Of course, these experiences can have profound effects on us, but the experience itself is, like everything else, conditioned. Wonderful things can happen when we're in deep states. But eventually, we come out of them. We have to. Sesshin ends. And we return to our lives. To all the things that we have to do and take care of in our lives. Bills to pay. A mountain of emails to answer. Errands to run. Family members to take care of. Really, the test of any of the experiences we have in our zazen or in sesshin is not whether the teacher approves or disapproves of the experience. It's not passing this or that koan. It's our life. It's how we live our life. That's the real litmus test of any experience we have. How do we respond when we have to do something we don't want to do? When somebody points out something unpleasant we've done, insensitive, how do we respond? When someone asks for help, how do we respond? The thing about being chuffed is that there's something under that, which is, I had an experience. That's the irony. I got out of the net. I'm this great gold carp. Leaping. Oh. Seppo, on the other hand, is okay with being meek. In the face of Sancho coming on strong with his freshly minted insight, he doesn't feel he needs to hold his end up to defend himself, this accusation. Why? Why is that? Because he thoroughly, thoroughly knows that there's nobody there. There's just activity. Just checking the temple accounts. Just receiving visitors. Just going out to pick tea in the fields. Just that. Eight winds are irrelevant. What the eight winds ruffle is our sense of self. It's easily ruffled because it's a fiction. It has to work hard to maintain itself. It is inherently insecure. It's the same with death. If we have directly experienced that there is nobody there, there is no body living this life, there is just this life, then equally we will know that nobody dies. It's like a knife cutting through air. What could possibly die? end with Setcho's verse. The golden carp comes out of the net. Don't say it remains in the water still. It shakes the heavens and moves the earth, swinging its fins, lashing its tail. It blows like a whale, raising great waves. Then the thunder sounds, and a cool breeze comes. A cool breeze, yes, a cool breeze comes. Who in the universe knows this? Each and every one of us can experience this cool breeze. We can't know it, we'll never know it, but we can be this cool breeze. We'll stop here and recite the four vows.